让人爱情嘛，今天前面那这个当然就给你妈的没到吧，机会没到吧过了，雪山的，但其实机会没到吧，给你南平安排的，其他我都给你南平去吃住不的，真的我都是说，其他吃住呗，那他那感谢给你了，你没法吃给你，真的没法吃给妈的，那没法嘛吃吧，那你起码。结婚起码结婚是两个月的，也是些。那结婚起码两个月，那那可能是两个月了，那你得了呀。结婚起码两三天了，做完了嘛，说那你要的也是些。第二天晚上就给他几点起码，比如说做完年纪，那地图上说写吧是，就是哦，地地块嘛学了的人嘛。
So good evening. We looked for a while first at this precious human rebirth that we achieved, but then came to recognize that whilst we have this rebirth, it is not going to last. Our death is inevitable, but the time of our death is uncertain. And when our death comes, we will not only leave behind all our possessions and our loved ones, but this body too. But our consciousness, our continuum will continue on into a new birth, arising in a new body. So we've now come to look at the potential subsequent rebirths that possibly await all of us.
And the chicken gang are you and I can't say a table among you, but gang are you, and chicken, Yamren Chiaki, and you go up your yovati, and then you get in the chakore. Then I'm written the Javalimbaina, then I'm written Delia, and the chicken Delia, and the chick Dunga bottom of Dunga Mawa, and the chick Chiaki, the Dunga Mawa, the Digi, Digi Nua, the Yimed, or Digi Mava, Nua, and Delia, Chiaki, Yamren go up in the meeting.
When our inevitable death comes, our consciousness will continue in one of two directions, either remaining in the high realms as we are now, or falling into the lower realms. If we remain in the high realms, there are various manifestations or expressions of high realms, which are differentiated by greater degrees of happiness or proportionately less manifest suffering. Or if one falls to the lower realms, there, the suffering is incomparable to what we have experienced in this life. And not only is the suffering in the lower realms so much more intense than we have now, the lower realms are also characterized by a situation of helplessness, of powerlessness, in that we are in the lower realms. One is unable to spiritually develop. One is unable to accumulate virtue in the way that we can now. So this therefore leads us to think, what leads to which either of these rebirths? And we recognize that a rebirth in the higher realms comes about solely in dependence on virtuous karma that we've accumulated, but rebirth in the suffering lower realms comes about solely in dependence on non-virtuous karma that we've accumulated. This then leads us to recognize that we cannot choose our next place of rebirth. It is not something under our own choice. Rather, the karma that we have created that dictates where our next rebirth will be.
Ah, 这个刚才是一个本来那是什么呢？面具是扎土呀的，俺这样子那是学什么就面具是下学期的那是扎土呀，俺那刚不的给他们那下学期呀，等不住呀，俺这怕是他找回呢，你出现了的那结果就会来土呀，俺是这个所说给新加坡端到那边那是说，俺这个他凭在俺现在是呢，就弄不掉了端到那边的，弄不下那是做的我来接近的，结合现在做接近的那听见主要的，那个地基主要的，就按照通讯所求吧，这个啊是米利亚。 비디기 되는
So this rebirth, we are amongst the beings of the higher realms, having been born as a human, and the higher realms are classified as rebirths of humans and of gods. And as humans, we know that whilst we are in the higher realms, it's not that we are free of problems, suffering and difficulty. We have so much experience of the pains and miseries that humans do experience. But this is still classified as a higher realm, not only because proportionately is the suffering much less than is experienced in the lower realms, but because of our remarkable human intelligence, as well as our capacity to cooperate with each other, we have so many techniques or methods at our disposal to help mitigate life's challenges. So we help each other, both strangers as well as people that we know. We learn from each other. We benefit from each from the group technological developments, such as medicine and so forth. So in these and many ways, we have a wide variety of techniques to help deal with the problems and difficulties that humans experience. And what is also of such great importance for human beings is we have the capacity with this intelligence to understand the Dharma and to develop it within our own minds, which means we can develop remarkable qualities such as genuine love, genuine compassion. In this way, we have the capacity to radically transform the future trajectory of our lives through the virtue that we accumulate through our spiritual development. Also, in the high realms, there are the various expressions of the God realms, whether in the desire realm or the form realm or the formless realm. And these are marked by incredible happiness, a happiness that humans can hardly imagine, and far fewer problems. And in some of these realms, the problems are so minor as to be unobservable from our perspective. But in particular, in these realms, the pleasures, the happiness is great.
And nyawa se chagore. Jeza nyawa ida dundro sum chingado. Jeza ta mandu dundro le machiba ne yana dundro le chagore yana nyawa le chagore yana nga ida le chagore. Di sum madu kese yama le chile. Ta dhele chagwa ne kanga khar khar yore se. Ta di ne thang di nga su hingu gore. Di bina nga su mili kena dada nga su ki mi ne thang gal gang tam chingan se hau gore wa. Di na shindu sum tanda lal ya ne ta di ne su di shrapu rapu rapa chishiru wa. Ta di na hau gore wa. ganga du ngaso la jeba ni ne tang ga du ru la ke na ne tang ga ne ga ne yore nya wa la jeba na ne tang ga ne yore yi da la jeba ni ne tang ga ne yose di ne da de ha go ba ina ge chim bu yu cha go re di ha go ba ina ga le yo ke ba yo ra se na da de ngaso ya ga o zho mo ra ngaso la dam ga yo de ro dam ga yo re che sa di ngan ru le di ne ga la de ga la de la ma zho ye ge ta bu lam ji ngaso da de be shi chi na be shi tang tu ye ge 刚才的写推的这种模样他们写推的这种模样他们写推的这种模样他们写推的这种模样他们写推的这种模样他们写推的这种模样他们写推的这种模样他们写推的这种模样他们写推的这种模样他们写推的这种模样他们写推的这种模样他们写推的这种模样他们写推的这种模样他们写推的这种模样他们写推的这种模样他们写推的这种模样他们写推的这种模样他们写推的这种模样他们写推的这种模样他们写推的这种模样他们写推的这种模样他们写推的这种模样他们写推的这种模样他们写推的这种模样他们写推的这种模样他们写推的这种模样他们写推的这种模样他们写推的这种模样他们写推的这种模样他们写推的这种模样他们写推的这种模样他们写推的这种模样他们写推的这种模样他们写推的这种模样他们写推的这种模样他们写推的这种模样他们写推的这种模样他们写推的这种模样他们写推的这种模样他们写推的这种模样他们写推的这种模样他们写推的这种模样他们写推
That's just a brief overview of the situation in the higher realms. And this is something later in the text we'll come to look at in some detail. The other direction one can take at a death is into the lower realms. So this we're going to look at in some detail from tonight. And so the lower realms have three broad divisions. The lower realms of the rebirth as an animal, as a spirit or as a oppressor, or in the hell realms. And these are differentiated in differing ways, but in particular in the animal realms, the suffering is much more intense than humans experience, but far less than those of the oppressors. But the oppressors, whilst their suffering is great, it is it's comparably little compared to the intense suffering that beings who are born in hell experience. So we, in this life, we have some experience of the sufferings of the human realm, both what we have experienced directly and what we perceive. But it's important to come to understand the sufferings of the unseen realms, and in particular here, the lower realms, because by coming to gain a good understanding of what it would be like to be reborn there, one can develop the stable determination not to create the causes that will inevitably lead to rebirth in the lower realms. So there is great purpose in this presentation on coming to understand the suffering that beings are experiencing right now in those lower realms. So we turn to the text where we concluded last week. So in the handout, we're at the very top of page 103, in the published book, at the bottom of page 89. Contemplate the suffering. So there's a sub outline here that we don't have it in the translation. The need to think about suffering. So here Lama Tsongkhapa presents the need or the reasons for thinking about suffering. Contemplating the suffering of the lower rebirths and ask yourself, what will become of me if I'm reborn in the lower rebirths? Nagarjuna said, every day recollect the hells which are fiercely hot and bitterly cold. Remember, too, the hungry ghosts emaciated by hunger and thirst. Observe the animals and recollect the numerous sufferings of confusion relinquish their causes, engage in causes of happiness. Once you have gained what is hard to gain, a human body in this world, endeavor to cut the cause of lower rebirths.
And the Ganesh young Hungarians and big Lucian Sam Dangures, Danga Sundakina, Da Jirashi to Gurunyam those, and it's Sam Dangures.
Just linking to what we have just looked at, when our inevitable death comes, our consciousness does not cease to exist, but will continue. It will continue in one of two directions. It can only remain, either remain in the high realms or fall to the low realms. So here we have been guided, Islamatun Kapa writes, contemplate the suffering of the lower rebirths and ask yourself, what will become of me if I'm reborn in the lower rebirths? So this then leads us to contemplate what are the sufferings of the lower realms. What Lamantun Kapa is encouraging us to do is something that we actually do in our own life. For example, if one is considering to move, first one will be have this consideration to move for a reason. There'll be some reason compelling you to think about moving to a new destination. Here, in this context, the reason is that death is coming, and then we will have to take rebirth somewhere new. But in our own lived experience, if we are considering moving somewhere, we will always take time and care to investigate potential destinations. We will try to avoid moving blind somewhere, but we will want to know what to expect. We will certainly want to weigh up various options to decide where is more desirable, what where to avoid. So we will investigate, and where we see a place is marked by hardship or deceit or violence, we'll do our best to avoid such a place. And if we settle on somewhere that seems much more appealing, we'll nevertheless investigate what to expect, perhaps what kind of environment it will be, what kind of weather to expect, and then we will look at what we need to purchase and how we should prepare, and then do so. So this is what we would do in our own life. So taking that way of thinking, here we need to investigate the potential future rebirths to ensure to, and then by, and from that, come to see how we should prepare to have to avoid harmful situations, but rather to have better situations.
Mm-hmm. Niawa,
To give a broad overview of the situation in the lower realms, Lama Tsongkhapa quotes from Nagarjuna. So looking at the first two lines, every day recollect the hells, which are fiercely hot and bitterly cold. So here, Nagarjuna is guiding us at the outset that this is a reflection that one should not just engage in sporadically, not merely hear a presentation and leave it at that, but one needs to take this to heart. And to take it to heart, one needs to engage in regular, repeated reflection.
So
we should approach this with a similar understanding that just like in our own world, whilst it is a single realm, the human realm, there are many different countries. And in these different countries, the situations can differ quite vastly. So in some countries, their rights are respected, there's the rule of law and so forth. But in others, this is not the case. Those people who live there are subjected to control or even abuse by the state or those such as warlords who have power. Other countries are in a state of war. So there's tremendous divergence in the lived experience of humans in dependence on in the country they happen to be in. So similarly, within the lower realms, there are different divisions there as well, where the lived experience can differ greatly. So, and Nagarjuna starts with presenting the situation in brief of the hell realms, the situation where for those beings living there, the suffering is the most intense and unbearable and inescapable. To receive this in, for us, the second line, the hell realms which are fiercely hot and bitterly cold. And so the purpose of hearing this presentation, and as we see in the first line, of reflecting on this every day, is to develop this determination. This is not what I want to experience, and I will do everything I can to ensure I do not accumulate the causes that will lead to rebirth in such a place. The three broad lower realms, the situation in the hells, the suffering there is the most intense and unbearable and inescapable. Where the suffering is far less than that is in the preta realm or the hungry ghosts, but there still the suffering is intense. So we have the verse continues. Remember too the hungry ghosts emaciated by hunger and thirst. So for the pretas or the hungry goats, their primary sufferings are intense hunger and thirst. It's an intensity of hunger and thirst that we have almost certainly never experienced in this life. They also have additional sufferings beyond that, but these are the most pronounced. So this is again something we should call to mind, that there are beings suffering in this way, and that they are in such a situation because of karma created. And we take that as inspiration to guard the karma we create.
On that dele that dele tus tuma nyua de da du ro de gele that dele tuma nyua da tus diki ma yu ida da tesu de chine diki tus ma yu de tuma tus nyua de ge ada tuma ida ka su du ro ya sam ta na ka su ro su na da du ro se de she ra sam ta ri gu nam ji she ya ma le se de ji sa a ji gu nam ji she ra me de en di chen de ya wo di chen ya wo se ji gang ga se ge ta blam de ge gang ga le de gang ga se ta blam shi da de tu ma nam ji me ba le se de lu ji cha ne ya de en su ko so nam sam ji sam ta de nam ji ba che she me ba le se che da de ne da mo bi du ma ra ma wi se che da ni jo so ta shin ten ba cha se che da jo so du du se de le ya mo shi mo mo ba ti mo de ne ge du ma en de che du shin so di shi ne
And thirdly, the text continues, observe the animals and recollect their numerous sufferings of confusion. So of the three lower realms, the suffering is least intense for animals, and they do have some capacity for happiness. But the main problem that animals experience is translated as confusion. The meaning is that they are dull, they are really stupid. In the sense, with the meaning that They are confused about what to do about their situation. They lack the intellectual capacity to deal with their situation, to improve their situation. So they have such limited intelligence. This then leads to them suffering so. So here too, we reflect on the situation of beings there so as to develop the determination that I will not accumulate the causes that may lead to such a rebirth.
Give
an example. Let's say one of the kangaroos around here jumps over a fence but doesn't quite get it right and ends up getting tangled up in the fence. Our kangaroo then is rather limited in what it can do if it's now caught up in this fence. It can struggle, but that's just going to make its pain more intense, may well rip its skin. But other than trying to forcefully free itself, it doesn't have much it can do for the simple reason that that this animal just lacks the intelligence to solve what really is quite, for us, quite a simple problem. If we were to be caught in a fence, we would have options. We could relax our mind, look at the situation, and come up with a solution. If we couldn't, we could call out for help. And for a kangaroo, they may be surrounded by those who have some care for them, the rest of their mob. But what can they do other than look on helplessly? Whereas fellow humans could easily help us from something small like that. And also, even if those other people were strangers to us, they could help us. This is not the situation for an animal such as a kangaroo, who may even be preyed on in such a situation. So this shows the difficulty for animals, that they just are so stupid.
That
in very brief is an overview of some of the sufferings in these lower realms. And this, as we see at the top, is something that Nagarjuna is advising us to reflect on every day. Reflect on the intense suffering from heat and cold in the hells, the intense suffering from hunger and thirst in, as a predator, or the suffering that comes from the stupidity of animals, and reflect on this again and again to the point where an emotional response arises within you that leads to, we see here, leads to wanting to relinquish their causes, engage in the causes of happiness. So in other words, engage in this reflection until an emotional response arises, leading to an apprehension to engaging in the non-virtue that will lead otherwise to such a rebirth. And this is the this reflection then needs to be engaged in repeatedly again and again until this apprehension to engaging in non-virtue arises in a way that is stable.
So in this reflection on the sufferings of the lower realms, the goal is of the meditation is twofold. Firstly, as we see in the third line in the second verse, that this apprehension to engaging in non-virtue needs to arise, and we need to regenerate it so that apprehension is stable. So it almost becomes visceral that one does not want to engage in anything non-virtuous. Then the second part of the reflection is what we see in the fourth line. So here, as one has a strong aversion arising to the potential rebirth of the lower realms and thereby towards the causes that will lead to such a rebirth, one also comes to see more clearly the advantages of this rebirth. And as we saw in the, a previous chapter on the precious human rebirth, this rebirth we tend to take for granted. We see it as commonplace or ordinary when one looks at the rebirths across the realms of samsara, we actually see just how special it is. So by looking at the sufferings of the lower realms, not only do we develop an aversion to being reborn there and therefore to the causes that will lead to such a rebirth, but a valuing of what we have achieved grows and a determination to accumulate similar causes, causes that will lead to further rebirths. This arises within one.
And the nicking under you buy a da, and in the duke, you do two bores, or it, and the kiddish or is lavna, that bad dickina, that is your is a topga, topga, the milu, de top do so, under you rub the gym, the separate chas, the topga, the milu, de top do so, said it. Just not that, that then under the carriers name, the topga.
So
So this meditation thus far has presented 2 points, and we're about to come to the third. So the first was this aversion due to potentially falling to the lower realms and thereby developing this aversion towards accumulating non-virtue. And then secondly, valuing this precious human rebirth that we've achieved evermore and this determination to engage in the causes of happiness. And now further, now the final part of final verse, one comes to strengthen the meditation that we have just concluded on the impermanence of this life, which had those three decisions. And this is reflected here in the final verse. Once you've gained what is hard to gain, a human body in this world, endeavor to cut the cause of lower rebirths. So this commitment that we've made based on the prior topic of meditation, that I must engage in the Dharma, I must do so from now, and I have to only engage in the Dharma. This then, that determination becomes even more stable within oneself. And one, in particular, strives to cut any accumulation of non-virtue, utilizing thereby this life in a meaningful way. And then just to say this word endeavor, this is okay, but it's the Tibetan really is quite strong here. It's like fully concentrate is more literal, which shows that the mind is completely focused on closing the potential of accumulating causes for the rebirth in the lower realms. These verses from Nagarjuna just give a very brief overview of what is experienced in the lower realms. But what it points to is not just what is experienced in the lower realms, but the conclusion of, or the purpose of this meditation, which is to get us to be ever more determined to utilize this precious human rebirth well, to accumulate the causes for excellent rebirths, rebirths in the higher realms. And this is also something that is being emphasized in our Wednesday night teachings on Shantideva's Engaging the Bodhisattva's Way of Life. Because there, currently, the focus has been on taking control of our mind and ensuring our mind doesn't come under the influence of the afflictions. Because when the mind is under the influence of the afflictions, we create the causes for suffering. So here we see that one develops the determination to cut the causes and cut the cause of lower rebirths. So one would normally say that is negative karma, non-virtuous karma, which is correct. But non-virtuous karma is accumulated by the afflictions. So therefore, this ties very closely with those who come to the, or who are following the Wednesday teachings as well. Those meditations on being mindful of one's mental process and thereby being aware of when the mind is afflicted and ensuring that one doesn't follow those afflictions. Thereby, one ceases to accumulate non-virtuous karma. And then what is stated here in the verse above, engage in causes of happiness. So one must not only turn away from non-virtue, but the skillful way to turn away from non-virtue is to engage in virtue. In other words, to strengthen one's wholesome minds ethical restraint, generosity, patience, love, compassion, and so forth, these wholesome minds, which are the causes of happiness, the causes of rebirth in the higher realms, and the ongoing spiritual development.
The guidance here then is both to accumulate virtue, as just been mentioned, through ethics, generosity, patience, love, compassion, and so forth, but also to purify. What purification means is also the same as accumulation, in that they both are about ensuring our mind is turned towards virtue, and thereby away from non-virtue. So to look specifically then at the process of purification, here the guidance is to rely on the four opponent powers. But what these four opponent powers really come down to are a skillful technique by which we change our way of thinking. And in order to change one's way of thinking, one should engage in purification practice again and again, because the process of changing one's way of thinking, in particular, in a sincere manner, takes repeated effort. So the four opponent powers can be practiced in any sequence, but just to give as an illustration then, one first can generate regret. So to generate regret, it's ideal if one recalls things that one has explicitly done. And one can generate regret for physical actions done, or speech made, or ways of thinking. So it's particularly helpful if one can recall specific things one has done, because the regret is likely to be much stronger. And to amplify
the regret or to make the regret more genuine, here one also recalls the suffering consequences that will follow from such non-virtue unless it is now purified. So here one generates regret. Then one can then, if one chooses, go to the second opponent power, or a second opponent power, because the order is not set, and that is of reliance. So this has two components again, one being of protecting refuge, where one can recall or call to mind that non-virtuous behavior was contrary to the guidance of the Buddhas, contrary to the example of the Sangha. And thereby, one confesses to the three jewels. One can also generate a bodhicitta here with the commitment to that, with the recognition that such non-virtuous behavior is contrary to the commitments of the bodhisattvas. And then one can go to another opponent power, that of the power of the promise, where one commits to not engaging in such behavior again. This then, ideally too, as with all of the opponent powers, should be done with sincerity, where one makes a commitment to close the door on that way of thinking or speaking or acting. And then finally, one can engage in an antidotal power. And this, it can be anything that one is inclined to, anything virtuous that one is inclined to. So some may choose to offer mandalas, some may choose to recite mantras such as Om Mani Padme Hum or another mantra. Others may engage in supplications to the Lama or to the Buddha, recitations of various prayers. And others may feel drawn to engage in a particular virtuous meditation such as love, compassion, or any other. So these are the four opponent powers, those of regret, reliance, the promise, and the antidote. And all four of them individually serve to purify, as they are virtuous. But together, they are extremely powerful. And therefore, this is a very skillful practice to engage in regularly. You can choose to engage in purification practice when you get up in the morning, and it can be a very skillful way to start the day. So one gets up and one settles down to do your practice, and you start by recalling non-virtue that you have done, in particular the kind of non-virtue that you have a propensity to a habituation towards, and you recall that generating regret, and recall to mind the suffering results that will follow from ongoing non-virtue. And with that, then, you make the promise, so the second opponent power, of I won't engage in this again. And in particular here, if you're doing this in the morning, you can think of your activities that lie ahead in the day. And especially, again, if this is a non-virtue that you are quite habituated to, you can think to yourself, in certain today, I may well encounter at this time or in that situation the conditions where I may act in this habitual way. I'll be on guard. I won't do it. And in this way, your power of the promise carries extra strength. And then you can then engage in the power of reliance, in calling to mind the Buddhas and going for refuge and generating bodhicitta. Then the final power is that of the antidote. Then you can lay out your offerings, sit down, and engage in the seven limb practice, for example, which starts with prostrations, offerings, and so forth, and concludes with offering a mandala. So in this way, what is very common in our tradition as a morning practice, one can do within or through the lens of being a purification practice. But purification practices are also practices of accumulation, because one purifies through accumulating a virtue, because there's a virtue that is contrary to the non-virtue. And that's how one purifies. So this then is a skillful way to do one's morning practice in a way that is also a purification practice.
To ensure that we continue to attain ongoing excellent rebirth, such as we have in this life, and not fall into the lower realms, the principal cause is that of ethics. So one needs to ethically restrain, at the very least, one's body from not engaging in non-virtue, as well as one's speech from not engaging in non-virtue, and ideally one's mind as well, to whatever extent one can, not to be afflicted. So this is the practice of ethics, and it is the primary cause that leads to, or really is the sole cause that leads to excellent rebirths, at rebirths such as we've achieved now. So it is indispensable that we take care of our mind at all times, not just in formal practice, but at all times, take care of our mind, and thereby we can take care of our physical behavior and our speech as well. But whilst ethical restraint is the sole cause that leads to an excellent rebirth, for that rebirth to be a fully qualified, precious human rebirth, it needs to be enhanced by other favorable circumstances. So in order that one has at least sufficient, if not an abundance, of material conditions, material comfort, one needs to engage in the practice of generosity, where one develops a sincere wish to give of oneself. One also needs to engage in the practice of patience so as to create the causes for one's sense faculties to be complete, but also to have harmonious relationships with others, to easily get on with others, and to ensure that one has a propensity towards virtue, to have a personality that is inclined towards virtue, one needs to cultivate the cause of joyous perseverance. And then
the final cause is that of prayer, where one should make prayers to, in each future life, to continue to meet the Mahayana Dhamma, to meet and recognize one's Lama as such, and come under the care of one's Lama. So this is then the final cause. So these are the causes that are required for ongoing precious human rebirths: ethics, generosity, patience, joyous perseverance, and prayer. And these causes are accumulated independent on our way of thinking. So, for example, patience is a mind of being patient. Generosity is a mind of generosity. So for these causes to arise in one in a way that is deep and not merely superficial, one needs to cultivate these causes repeatedly over a sustained period, both in formal settings, such as now when we're all thinking about it, as well as during our day as we go about our various activities. And in this way, we create the causes for ongoing excellent rebirths. Key point I want to emphasize here is that the meaning of Buddhist practice and the focus of what you as Buddhists should be doing is focusing on your way of thinking, on transforming your way of thinking. So when you think of, for example, accumulation and purification, recognize that this refers to a way of thinking. So too, the accumulation of merit or the avoidance of non-virtue, it really comes down to a way of thinking. Because whilst on the one hand, certainly we shouldn't physically engage in non-virtue, and ideally we should physically engage in ways of helping, so too with our speech, what we are really trying to get to is to change our way of thinking. What a person who is spiritually developing, what they will recognize within themselves is they are developing, for example, an aversion to harming others. And with this, to the extent this aversion to harming others arises, they will not speak badly towards others, certainly will not act in a way physically that brings harm to others. And together with this, developing a predisposition to being of benefit to others. So to the extent that is arising, this person will readily reach out to help others through their speech, through their way of acting. So it's this transformation of a way of thinking. This is the meaning of Buddhist practice. So on our continuum, we have a wide collection of karmic imprints, virtuous and non-virtuous, some very powerful, some weak. And when our time of death comes, whichever imprint is most powerful will determine our next rebirth. Moreover, our various experiences in each rebirth, in this life too, comes about independence on the karma we've created. The way we create karma, virtuous and non-virtuous, is through our way of thinking. So if our way of thinking is virtuous, we will accumulate extensive virtue. If our way of thinking is harmful, we are going to accumulate non-virtuous karma. Hence the need to transform one's way of thinking. One may physically refrain from harmful action and harmful speech, and this is excellent and required. But if one's mind is non-virtuous, still one accumulates non-virtue, although it's not as strong. And moreover, though, what causes our mind to be non-virtuous and thereby our behavior is the afflictions. Hence the need, and this has been what's so emphasized in the Wednesday teachings, the need to weaken, to subdue the afflictions and eventually eradicate them. Because it's through the weakening and eventual eradication of the afflictions that we bring about an end to the accumulation of non-virtue. But also, a further role the afflictions can play is they can lead to the ripening of non-virtuous karma. So if we weaken and eventually eradicate the afflictions, the non-virtuous karmic imprints that will still remain on our continuum cannot ripen. So therefore, the eventual goal is not to purify all negative karma, it's to eradicate the afflictions. Or to express that differently, the eventual goal or objective of purification is to remove our propensity to the afflictions, to completely eradicate that, so that afflictions never arise. And then, whatever non-virtuous karmic imprints remain on our continuum, no matter how strong, really doesn't matter. It cannot ripen. So this is why you should be very clear that the meaning of Buddhist practice is transforming our way of thinking. The meaning of accumulating merit, of purifying non-virtue, means transforming our way of thinking, developing this deep aversion to harming, developing this propensity to being of benefit.
Wherever we are reborn and however we experience that particular rebirth, all comes about in dependence on our way of thinking. So this is a statement about our future rebirth, but it's also a statement about this current rebirth. How we experience this rebirth, how we experience our life is dependent on our way of thinking. Therefore, by transforming our way of thinking, we transform this life as well as lives to come. Lama Tsongkhapa states very clearly that everything depends on our mind.
And then he goes on to say, this isn't from the text again, it was quoting from something else. He then goes on to say that from a wholesome motivation, happiness comes. From an unwholesome motivation, suffering follows. So everything depends on the mind.
As Lama Tsongkhapa said there, everything depends on our mind. So that we have attained this excellent rebirth has come about independence on our own way of thinking. And whether our next rebirth is in the high realms or low realms depends on our way of thinking. And this isn't the truth of the statement from Lama Tsongkhapa isn't just about where one is reborn. It's also about how one experiences each rebirth. So let's take this, our own human experience. Everything that is manufactured, that is created, has come about independence on a way of thinking. Vast number of causes are required, and these required mental engagement, requires thought. So for each of you, you have a wide number of skills and talents and abilities. These all required your mental engagement to be able to learn these skills, develop these talents. And to take something very visible and easy to understand. So if someone has a desire to build a property, build a home, the only way that will come about is if it starts with them having the wish to do so, with that, having that thought. Then that thought, if it's merely left at that, nothing more than the thought will arise. But if the home or the home is to be constructed, that thought needs to be developed. A clear plan needs to be visualized. This too is about developing the mind further. And this plan needs to be visualized independence on knowledge and information to see what is possible, thinking about how it can be brought into reality, what is required, this and that, and who to contract and who is better and so forth. All the detail to make this plan a reality. And then it can be acted upon. So at every stage here, there's mental engagement. And this is for building our home. It's for everything around us, our variety of inequalities too. And so too about our ongoing spiritual development. In order to have that determination to accumulate the causes, whether it's for enlightenment or individual liberation or for rebirth and further excellent rebirth, this requires us to develop a wish to do so. And in particular, if our wish is for a great goal, it can't just be a mere aspiration. How wonderful it would be if all beings were happy. One really needs to make this happen. One needs to bring about a deep, deep transformation. And this requires reflection in the way guide that is presented repeatedly over a sustained period. And then it will be brought into reality. Keep this in mind as you go through your day, as you observe society, recognizing how everything follows from mental engagement. Whether you are seeing people acting in the world or you're seeing the fruitions or the results of their endeavors. So when you see someone giving a speech, then you know that person would have had given some thought to what they had to say. Otherwise, they're probably not going to make much of a speech. Or those engaging in warfare. This needs to have been well planned out. Others is not going to go very well and devastating consequences for themselves will follow. So every physical and verbal interaction follows from our way of thinking, from one's mind. So I'm saying this to you, I'm emphasizing this point now many times, so that in your own practice, you ensure your mental engagement is excellent. You don't just engage in mere recitations, but you engage mentally with the practice. So too with these meditations here, that you don't merely go through the outlines of the meditation, but you generate these actual minds within yourself. You generate this emotional response so that you can through habituation, develop a change in your way of thinking. And then specifically in the context of this topic, I encourage you to, when you're seeing all that's achieved in our world, ask yourself, how can beings in the lower realms possibly achieve anything like this? They lack the intelligence to do so, and their suffering is too intense. They can't solve their problems. They cannot think of solutions because their pain is too intense and they lack intelligence. Whereas for us as human beings with this remarkable human intelligence, just look at the potential comfort and ease in our world. And we recognize just what human beings have achieved. Then we can take that as a guide to what we ourselves can achieve with our own minds in terms of our spiritual development. That we really can, in what remains of this life, still we can bring about a radical change and a lasting change to our way of thinking. But this requires us to make a concerted effort with transforming our mind, letting go of all that really has no value, and focusing on the one thing that does. Then thank you. Then we'll conclude there for tonight. Thank you.